Hey, hi, I'm Bonnie. Welcome to this podcast, Make Joy Normal, where we chat about homeschooling and family life. With my co-hosts, Elizabeth and Christina, we address your questions and topics in a way that can create more joy in our lives. Please submit any questions you have by email or voice message in the links in the show notes. If you found this episode valuable, please share it with a friend, like, or leave us a review. That's how we get the word out. Thanks for trying to make joy normal in your own life.
There we are. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Hello. How are you?
I'm really, really good. Yes, these episodes will be rolling out while I'm away, as people have probably picked up on because I've mentioned it a few times on the podcast. But this will be our last episode for a couple of months. So I had told you we had a bunch of questions submitted about dictation, which is interesting because we've covered it a couple of times, but I think it is something that people wrestle with because it's so simple. To me, that's why people wrestle with it. It's just way too simple. Yeah. And how can it possibly be that dictation can accomplish so much in so little time? So I thought that would be a great thing for us to cover today.
Which, if I could lead with, we've been doing dictation for, we were just talking about this, 2 years now, so is how long we've known each other and been doing this. And my oldest is so excited because he's spelling better now.
Aww.
He said the other day, he was working on his science workbook and he was like, Mom, I just wrote these words. And when I double checked, I wrote them correctly. And I asked him, I said, well, why do you think that is? And he goes, I think it's all the like spelling out loud you've been doing for me. And like, I've just been working harder at it and stuff. So I think it's in part due to dictation. It's just going through spelling rules with him as we dictate. And it's just such simple things, you know.
And it's all contextual, right? So we put words and phrases and sentence structure in context.
Yeah.
And suddenly, it makes such a big difference. But it's a slow drip, right? So it's not like, oh, suddenly they know how to spell X because, you know, they've had a spelling test and we know that they can spell these 10 words now. Because in reality, that doesn't actually happen. Kids can get 10 out of 10 on a spelling test and actually not be able to spell that word in context, depending on the kid, right? And how their brain works, but not be able to spell it in context.
Right.
You know, but they can memorize it for a short period of time in their short-term memory and have those spelling words, and then it's gone. So spelling tests are often not kind of the way. So, yeah. So should we just sort of jump in there?
Yeah. Okay. So if we're going to focus on dictation, if you could very briefly just explain what dictation is.
Sure.
Just start with the basics.
So essentially in the big picture of things, we use the term dictation. If you were speaking something to somebody and they were taking it down, either writing it or typing it, taking it in shorthand, that would be dictating something to another person, right? When we're talking about dictation in the context of education, we're talking about me, the mom or the teacher, reading something aloud to a child and having the child write it down correctly. So there's two primary ways that can look. One is that we can let them write it down however they see fit and make the mistakes and then go over the mistakes with them. What I found is that very early on, it was much more efficacious for just for learning and for confidence to actually dictate as much as necessary so that it's right the first time that they do it. So for example, we're going to capitalize here. Here's how you spell this word. Here's where you put the period. That means the sentence is over. You're just monologuing, in a sense, exactly everything they do so that the dictation is correct when they're finished. And I found that, first of all, it didn't feel like every dictation was a test that way. But also, it was, we weren't learning the wrong way to do something, right? We were only ever learning the right way to do something. And as a parent, you don't have to worry about that the right way isn't, you know, that you don't know necessarily the right way. All you're looking at something, a passage from a book or a poem, you're looking at it. So you're just saying what's exactly on the page. There's a capital T here, then H-E-R-E, then a space, then W-A-S, or whatever help the child needs at whatever level they're at. So what dictation would look like is, for me, is that I'd be dictating something to the child that was short enough that they could accomplish in 5 to 10 minutes max, usually 5 minutes. that they could accomplish in that period of time. And we would choose things to learn about. Everything was a passive lesson. I'm going to say this to you and you're going to learn how to make a T, or you're going to learn that TH says T or whatever, or is the, or whatever, or that a space goes here between these two words, whatever you're teaching. But then some things become an active lesson, like, oh, look at that. Look how in the word was, the S is a Z sound. Isn't that interesting? Right? I wonder why, if there's other words where S is a Z sound, let's look at that. You know, oh, here's words where it says a S sound, and here's words that says a Z sound. Isn't that interesting? And you're just pointing it out, right? But you're drawing that out as a lesson. So I might do that a couple of times per each dictation, kind of pull out a little active lesson as opposed to the passive lesson that the entire passage will be. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give them as much help as necessary so they can get it correctly. So with a pre-reader, that's going to be, you know, letter formation, letter identification. I might actually be drawing dots so that they can trace the letter. And with an older child, it might be, you know, helping them to spell a word or seeing if they know how to spell it first before they actually write it down. With an even older child, it might be where to put the punctuation. So we're moving up with them as they gain skill. You know, we're moving up with them in dictation to the different level that they're at. And we're just supporting them however they need support to write it down correctly.
Right.
Yeah.
I know my sons love dictation, I think, because it's effortless for them. It's, they're learning a lot without putting in much effort, because sometimes my kids are like, I don't want to do this. That's too much writing, you know, but when I'm dictating to them, they don't have to worry about whether or not they know how to spell something or what punctuation, because they're being told and learning the why, you know, kind of as an after effect. This makes them relax and just.
Exactly. I think that's why dictation is so effective too, is because it's relational, because you're right there with them, you're looking at them, you know, it's enjoyable. You could make it not enjoyable, but it's not recommended. This should be, like, for us, it was always the first thing that we did with my kids. And it was a way of filling their tank. Like, this can be a really enjoyable moment. We're just looking at language. I'm not trying to ram something down your throat. I'm not trying to even teach you something. I am just walking with you and we're enjoying this moment.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's a beautiful gift to give your kids, to make language, learning language, and everything else for that matter, because dictation was really the foundation for all our learning, to make it non-threatening and non-judgmental, right? And that's a lovely thing. There's enough, you know, there's enough tests we have to be put through in life. You know, we don't need to make learning language one of them.
Sure, yeah. If we could move on to how do you select what you're going to dictate to your child?
Right, that's a great question. I would usually, when my kids were really small, I would usually just pick out their own favorite nursery rhymes. That's kind of where I got started, because they already knew them. They knew what word came next. You know, they'd been sitting on my lap since they were toddlers listening to the nursery rhymes. So that's usually where we started. And a lot of them are funny and light. And, you know, so I would usually either choose a nursery rhyme or let them choose a nursery rhyme. Sometimes my kids would just want to pick a phrase that they really liked or a favorite line from a story or something. And they would actually do it over and over again. I think I've told you this before, but Lydia was, you know, she started dictation really young because she had older siblings doing dictation. So it was probably three. She wrote, "I love mama," for probably, you know, a couple of months. Like, that was her dictation every day. "I love mama," you know, which is really sweet. And I wasn't, you know, she was really little. I wasn't going to try and say, okay, well, it's time we move on from this. You know, I know that she's going to get tired of "I love mama" at some point. You know, she's not going to be 16 and still saying, you know, can we please write "I love mama"? They want something more challenging. So that's where I would start. So really nice to have really good nursery rhyme books in the house. I would let my kids choose lines from books we were reading that they really enjoyed, either books that they really liked that they were reading to themselves, or books that we were reading together. Sometimes we would just pick a passage and we might do a paragraph and do it over a few days. Sometimes we would choose something out of their science book that they just found particularly interesting. I wouldn't recommend a steady diet of, you know, science book or eyewitness book or whatever. But I think if that's what's going to help your kid do dictation, the fact that you want to write about, you know, rockets, for, you know, 3 months solid, it's okay. In the big picture of things, that's okay, right? They're going to be learning language skills, even if it's not necessarily beautiful. They will eventually move on from that. So I would, you know, really work with them. If they're really science-oriented kids, try and find sources that are also beautifully written to choose, right? Or poems that would address science or social studies, which would bring me to my our favorite resource of all time, which is a book called Favorite Poems, Old and New. It's a huge, thick book of poetry for children, all written in topic. It's they're organized topically. So you can look something up like bugs or the seasons or geography or my family, things like that. Like the poems are organized topically. And that's really fun for kids to do. And it has a huge variety of poetry, like things from very, very appropriate for very small children and things, you know, appropriate for teenagers and beyond. So, but it's a really lovely book. And then the back of the book also has poems organized. It cross-references all the poems in the book. And there's two more indexes in the back, one by the first line of the poem and one by the poet themselves. So that's really fun because sometimes as a mom, you can only remember the first line of the poem or your child. I want to do that poem that starts with, you know, so it's really nice to have the organized by first line alphabetically, right?
Oh, we bought that book actually. And so that's what we use primarily for dictation. My kids really love J.R.R. Tolkien. They've read The Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit. And so he has, I think, just two poems in there, but that's what I picked, one for one kid and one for the other for dictation. I dictate the title and then I dictate the author. And as soon as I dictated, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien, they were like, "What? I get to do a poem by J.R.R. Tolkien? This is great."
I love that. You know, I love that the kids your age would know, you know, they would know the author, and it's just, it's fabulous. So that's a really fun and way to sort of approach poetry. And, you know, my kids did a remarkable amount of poetry. So yeah, that was a great resource. Sometimes I would choose a line or a paragraph, depending on the age of the child, from a book that we were reading that they were very, very excited about. And I would choose it from the next chapter so they would get some little hint of what's coming. That was really fun. Yeah, especially for somebody who's maybe a little more reluctant. It's like, what? Tell me what happens. Yeah. Well, we're going to have to read it.
Right. That's brilliant. Well, with older kids, because I think you've said that dictation should be like a 5 to 10 minute thing, right? What about older? Like, do you still do dictation with your high school kids? If so, how long would that lap be? And, you know, like, would you do like a whole speech?
Yes, but I break it down. So we would do it over several days. Okay. So speeches for sure, monologues, you know, passages out of plays, you know, lots. I mean, so many different resources, right?
Right. Well, because I expect your high school kids, they might not need spelling help as much as first or second grade.
You're talking with high schoolers, you're talking a lot more about the actual passage itself and what it means, you know? Okay. So there might be some higher level grammar, punctuation or whatever, and you're always going to address that as necessary. But often it's, you're talking about the author, you're talking about what it means. And that's really lovely. That's a really lovely conversation to enter into with older kids. You know, it's funny because with my first few kids, I didn't do dictation later on because I sort of thought by the time I can't really challenge them anymore, I'll just wrap it up, you know, so 12, 13, whatever age that was. However, one of my older daughters reminded me, she said, well, because I did speech arts competitively. Several of my kids did speech arts competitively. She said, you actually did do dictation with me because we'd always dictate the passage that I was learning because it helps you memorize, right? And so I thought, yeah, right. Okay. I did do it in that context. I mightn't have done it every day, but I did do it in that context. But my younger kids really liked the idea of me doing dictation every day and not stopping at high school, right? Because it was enjoyable, right?
So at what point do you, realize that it's time to move on to a little bit more advanced stuff. So let's say you've got a fifth grader who may still be struggling with spelling, but you've got, a third or fourth or, even older than that, that doesn't struggle at all, is ready to move on to, from you spelling to you just reading out loud and they just write as you dictate. Mm-hmm. At what point, because every kid learns differently at mm-hmm. different paces. And so just when do you know when to move on to more advanced stuff?
Such a good question. So it comes very gradually, right? And often it's the child themselves that are actually saying, I'd like to do something a little more challenging. But I think what's important to note is that in terms of the nature of the passage, it can essentially be as challenging or not challenging as you want, right? So you could do, say, a passage from The Lord of the Rings with a very young child, mm-hmm. you're just going to help them a lot more. Mm-hmm. And maybe you only do over the course of, maybe they only do two or three words a day to begin with. Mm-hmm. And maybe you only accomplish one or two sentences over a week or two, if that's what they'd like to do. That's all you're trying to do. With an older child, in that 5 to 10 minutes, I never really moved beyond that time frame because it was, that it accomplished so much. Yeah. An older child, though, who's proficient at spelling and proficient at penmanship, is actually going to accomplish a lot more in 5 to 10 minutes than a 6-year-old or 7-year-old or 8-year-old is. Mm-hmm. So they might be able to do a whole paragraph, just in the context, or a longer poem, just in the context of one dictation, because they're moving a lot more quickly. So it depends really how much you're spending time talking about the passage itself. Really, that's in a sense what decides how deep you go, mm-hmm. right? Because if you actually slow down and you only do, say, one stanza of a poem, you can talk a lot more about a poem.
Right.
So I would say you could take the same passage and you could do it every year with your 6-year-old, your 7-year-old, your 8-year-old, your 9-year-old, your 12-year-old, your 15-year-old, your 18-year-old, and make it as challenging as it needed to be for that age range. Now, there's some, your 15-year-old probably doesn't want to do nursery rhymes, right? But your 6-year-old could certainly do, 3 words from The Lord of the Rings, or one sentence from Lord of the Rings over a couple of days. So in a sense, we don't have that. It's not a problem. We're just addressing different things. So say, I'm just going to grab a book so that I can kind of illustrate this idea. Okay. So I have the 3 Theban plays. So let's start with Antigone. So there's a line here. I'm just going to read a couple of lines. I could never stand by silent, watching destruction march against our city, putting safety to rout. Nor could I ever make that man a friend of mine who menaces our country. Remember this, our country is our safety. So I could read that to my child. Now, probably this isn't going to capture my 6-year-old or 7-year-old's attention, but just, for the purpose of illustration, I could say, "Ooh, what does that mean? Putting safety to rout. What do you think that means?" And they might make a couple of guesses, or they might know what it means. And you could say it's like chasing safety away. And so then you could say, "Would you like to do that?" Maybe they like that imagery. Maybe something captures them about that. And so then you could say, "Let's write putting safety today. You do those 2 words today. Could you do 2 words? Yeah, I think so. Okay, let's do that." So then you're going to say, well, this is the middle of a sentence, so we're not going to capitalize, right? So a small p, and then U-T-T-I-N-G, or maybe they're helping, if they're starting to read, maybe, what letters say the ing sound, put ing? What letters say that? And maybe they guess, and maybe they get it right, maybe they don't get it right. And then there's a space, and then there's a new word, safety. Safety. So what do you think safety means? Right? Oh, I don't know. Feeling safe, being safe. What does it mean? So you could talk about that for a minute. You could look it up in the dictionary if you wanted to. And then what do you think safe starts with? Right? Yes. S, right? Safety. What is the vowel that comes after the S? So we could be just letter by letter putting this very high level piece of literature in front of our 6-year old. Now, I'm not recommending that we do that, right? I'm just saying it's certainly possible because we're going to give them as much help as necessary. So then with an older child, maybe they're 10 and maybe you're reading Antigone or maybe you've watched it or, you know, been discussing it or something. I could never stand by silent. I could never stand by silent watching destruction. And there's a pause there. What do you think we do? Maybe, you know, they could spell all those words. I could never stand by silent. Can you spell all those words? Yeah, I think so. Okay, great. I could never stand by silence. Then there's a pause. How do you think we indicate the pause? Right? And maybe they guess wrong. We can just tell them, right? Oh, that's a comma. Remember a little dot with a little tail? That's a comma. That's a pause in the sentence. I could never stand by silent watching destruction march against our city. Do you know how to spell destruction? That's kind of a tricky word. Can I try? Sure. Okay. You can try. And then maybe for another child who's 3 or 4 years older, you actually do the whole stanza. Or maybe you break the stanza into 2 days and you discuss what was the writer trying to illustrate here? What is he trying to tell us? You know, what aspect of his, presumably if you're doing this with an older child, you're doing it in the context of actually reading the poem, the play. So then you're going to be discussing what is the play about? Who's speaking here? Why are they saying those things? You know, we're going to delve a lot more into the why of it, right? But essentially, we just have to be, in terms of knowing when to ramp up what we do, in terms of resources, you have a lot of fluidity in resources, whatever you're choosing. And you could do a nursery rhyme with your, 16-year-old. There would be, if they wanted to do that, yeah, there's a deeper meaning behind this particular nursery rhyme. What do you think? Let's talk about this, right? This might be fun. It meant something when you were 5 or 6. Now it means something really different, right? So we could do that. But in terms of when you challenge them in terms of their actual skill level, sure, that's sort of a different question. And it's a really good question to ask. So what are we looking at? So I would say we start that by just asking a question. Okay, that's the end of the sentence. Yeah. Do you know what you do at the end of a sentence? If they just blank out, clearly they haven't got the idea that a period goes at the end of a sentence yet, right? So you might say it's a little type of punctuation that we use to show that the sentence is over. Does that help you remember? And they might say, oh, right, I know, that's just a dot, right? Yeah. Or they might say, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. Even though you've done it 50 times with them before, they still might not know. But the thing is, every time you've done dictation with them, you've said, okay, this sentence is over. So we're putting a little dot here. That's the period. And you just say it. It's not a lesson. You just say it out loud. So, you know, they just pick it up over time. For some kids, they're going to do that in 2 weeks. For some kids, they're going to do that in 2 years. And it's just okay when they pick up that particular skill. If you feel like they should know that skill, then you can take it aside and kind of focus on that. Mm-hmm. That's okay. This is what we're focusing on. You don't have to even say that out loud to your child. It's like, okay, there's this little dot called a period at the end of the sentence. Let's see if you can remember to put it in. And maybe you preface every single dictation with that reminder, right? Let's see if you can remember. If you don't, I'll remind you. Don't worry. Don't make it threatening, right? Don't worry. I will tell you if you forget. But let's see if you can remember, because this is interesting. You might even say this passage has 3 periods in it. So we're just being sensitive to when to challenge them. If they blank out and they really obviously have no idea, they're probably not really ready to move on to something more difficult, right? This is actually one of the beauties. It kind of brings up one of the beauties of dictation, because sometimes a child who's a very advanced reader, at 6 years old or whatever, you can really be working on punctuation, because they don't need the help with the spelling of the word or the capitalizing of the letters or whatever they don't need help with. You just focus on what they do need help with, you know, and you're never going to find that kind of personalization with a program. They sort of have to hit the average 7-year-old or the average 9-year-old in a language arts program. And reading is so individual that it's a beautiful thing to be able to just really individualize it in that way. And so when we have a child, like say a child who's really good at making letters and this has very tidy penmanship or whatever, but they can't actually read very well, that they can do quite a long dictation, but they're actually learning how to read as we're doing the dictation. Oh, look, those two letters make this sound. And oh, when we put them all together, it makes this sound. You know, that's how you spell this word, right? So we just are walking with them, being sensitive to where we can provide a little bit of a challenge without it being threatening.
When you were going over it and you gave the scenario of, you know, whether or not a child remembers, you know, a period or what it's called and whatnot, it kind of dawned on me that, you know, how often I even will kind of get irritated at my kids for not remembering something that has kind of been drilled into them for, you know, weeks or months, you know, for years even. Right. And just coming to the realization that we don't get mad at babies when they, you know, crawl instead of walk, right? They know how to walk, but they choose to crawl because it's faster.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things like that. But
exactly,
we tend to get irritated or upset at some of our older but still young children because we assume they should remember. But if we look at it in terms of how much they're learning every day, just in life, you know, they're learning virtue, punctuation, they're learning math facts, they're learning to read, write, they're learning how to clean up after themselves, how to clean themselves.
How to have table manners. Yeah. I mean, it's everything, right?
The list goes on. And yet I get, you know, irritated at my kids if they can't remember what a period is called, you know? And, and just kind of how unfair that is for us as parents to do that. And again, I'm calling myself out. I'm not targeting any.
No.
But, you know,
we need to, because it can be easy to just forget what it's like to be learning something. The analogy that I kind of think of is if your boss said, you know, told you to do something a certain way and said, I want you to do this way now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, or taught you a new computer skill or whatever. And then the next day they came along and said, you're not doing this right. I can't believe this. We talked about this yesterday, you know, and it would be so shaming in a sense to have a boss do that to us instead of them saying, oh, remember, I had asked you this way. I know it's hard to change your habits, but, you know, I'd ask you to do it this way. So if you can find ways to remember that, you know, if we could write it down or I can go over it with you again, so much more dignified than, you know, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. I told you last Tuesday too. This is ridiculous. You know, or maybe you have a part-time job. You go in once a week or something. And how do you remember something, you know, between then and now? You know, so I think we have to just treat our children with such dignity. But, you know, we will forget, and we forget every day, right?
Yeah. Well, even one of my daughters has been potty trained for a while and has had a couple accidents recently. And my husband and I don't get upset at her. She gets very upset and is crying. And we're like, it's okay. It happens. You're not in trouble. You know, like, you were playing, having a good time. You forgot, you know.
But one of my granddaughters always prefaces an accident with, now don't be mad.
Right.
Now don't be mad.
Right.
No, I'm not going to be mad. Just tell me what's going on.
So I don't know. That was just, I feel like a Jesus moment that spoke to me. Vocalized.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful thing. And you know, I think when we, you know, as podcasters, as mothers to mothers, or, you know, whatever context we're working within, but certainly my listeners, that's something they really, really love about you, is you're honest about your own failings, right? And we have to be, like, if we want to, you know, if we get up and, you know, say, oh, well, you know, I was super good at this and I never got mad at my kids. And of course, that's the ideal. Of course it is. Nobody's ideal is to get mad at their kids.
Right.
It's just not. But we are going to fail. I think that, that if we can be honest about that, then we can touch people's lives because, like, okay, yeah, I had that moment today, you know, and I remember Elizabeth, she just went through that with her kids. And, you know, Bonnie went through that 10 years ago with her kids. Remember her talking about the time she yelled at her son because couldn't do his math? Oh yeah, I remember that. You know, it's meaningful to share in that way.
Sure. Well, some days I'm very patient. I even surprise myself. And then the next 3 days, I can't handle anything. And my kids are like, where did this monster come from?
Yeah. I want my mom back.
Right. Yep.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I love it. So are there any other questions?
Just if you want to add anything more that I didn't ask about dictation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I might wait for more questions. Questions about dictation come pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that sort of I am giving enough scope for the questions that we have right now. But certainly I would encourage our listeners to, you know, if you want more specific answers to questions or if it didn't cover your particular concern, don't hesitate to reach out with questions. We have a place to put your questions either by voicemail or by email in the link in the show notes now, which is really handy. And I have gotten some voicemails, which is really lovely to actually hear people's voices, you know, leaving a question or comment or whatever. So yeah, so I really appreciate that. It is the kind of thing that I think you sort of have to get into and do and experience, and then sometimes more questions come.
Yeah, I was just about to say that because, you know, I've been doing this with my kids for 2 years now, but right at the beginning, it was nerve-wracking because this was new territory. I went to private schools growing up. I wasn't homeschooled. And I also didn't see, I was already grown and out of the house when my siblings were homeschooled. So I've actually never seen it done. And I'm trying to figure it out all on my own.
Yeah. And you've got a lot of kids, right?
Not on my own because I've got you as a mentor. But, you know, doing it by myself without somebody physically here to teach can be kind of difficult to say the least. But dictation is something that I think I personally made harder than it had to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I would advise our listeners, just grab a book off your shelf tomorrow. I mean, anything. And just, you know, dictate a sentence or a line for a verse. I just found out today that a line in a poem is called a verse. So,
hey, by the way, one thing that I think is probably worth mentioning is a lot of times I've gotten the question over the years, when to start? Like, how do I know my child is ready to start dictation? Which I think is a great question. And my sort of benchmark for that is if the child can hold a pencil and make a few letters or some squiggly lines and have, you know, sort of be somewhat adept with a pencil and not cry, then that's a really good starting point, right? If you put a pencil in their hand and ask them to do something and they cry, this is, you know, we don't want crying. Like that's not, you know, that's not going to help anybody learn anything because we don't really learn that well when we're crying. So that's something that would be, you know, so say, for example, when your kids are picking up crayons and starting to color, or, and I'm not talking about the, you know, like a toddler sort of scribbling on things, but, you know, when they're sort of picking up and they're actually trying to make a picture or they're trying to make letters of their name or whatever, that's often how dictation starts. It's like, can you show me how to write my name? You know, that's dictation, right? And, you know, don't worry if it's in marker or crayon or whatever it is they want to do it in. That's just sort of irrelevant. It doesn't have to be, you know, we have to let go of our expectations and understand that what we're teaching here are both the skills and the love of language. Sure. We don't need to get bogged down with the details like what color it's in, or is it in the right kind of book, or does it matter if it's on the back of, you know, a piece of recycled mail or whatever. It doesn't really matter, you know, when you start, because whatever, just work with what's there, right?
Two questions came to mind.
Yeah.
One, would you advise against, or is it kind of neutral? What if you just grab a whiteboard and a dry erase marker, because that's fun for the younger kids?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not a big whiteboard fan because I'm left-handed. And so you erase everything you just wrote.
Yeah.
So awkward. So for me, but my kids often had like, they'd be like a whiteboard made for kids, and it would have like a spiral binding, might have 4 or 5 different pages. Mm-hmm. And they could, it would have like trace this picture or trace these letters or whatever. That's often where we started. Kids love whiteboards.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
So then my other question is, what if you have a child that is still struggling with a good amount of letters in the alphabet, but knows a handful? What would you do? Because I would imagine dictating a sentence could be different.
Yeah, it'd be tricky.
There would be a lot of letters that they might not know. Yeah. Did you just dictate, you know, cat or, you know, math?
Absolutely. Start with what you can. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, if you're trying to expand how many letters they know, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't want to do this, like you wouldn't want to make half or two thirds of the letters, ones they don't know, that would be hard. But say choose a word that maybe has one letter they don't know in it. So maybe they know, they don't know E, but they know B-A-S. So you could write base, you know, maybe they're ball players. And so you could actually do the E in dots. Or you could say, I'm going to make the E for you because that's not a letter you know yet. Or would you like to trace these dots? Because that will show you how to make the E. You might draw it on your side of the page and then they try it on their side of the page. Look, we do a line like this and then we make like a C. You've done it. You can do a C. So I think you can do an E. You know, would you like to give that a try? And they might say no, or they'd like you to do it. Or they might say, yeah, I'd like to try that. So it's an opportunity, but we don't, again, we want to challenge without threatening. So we don't want it to be, I need you to learn how to make these six new letters today, right? You know, one letter at a time is usually adequate. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, should we wrap it up there?
Yeah, before we That's do, great. If I could give...
Oh, yes, you wanted to do a plug. This is great.
Yes, so this is a plug, a shout out to my dear friend. I don't know how many of our listeners remember when we had Trent Horn on talking about dictation, but his lovely wife has started a YouTube channel.
Awesome.
And it's called Too Far with Laura Horn. And she is hilarious. She just kind of shares, motherhood and, a lot of it is geared specifically to mothering in a Catholic family. But again, that's Too Far, T-O-O, Far with Laura Horn. Hilarious. And yeah. She's also going to hate me for giving this plug to her, but the world needs Laura.
That's okay. What can she do about it? Unfriend you? Yes, I don't know.
Yes.
Oh, no, that's great. Yeah, thank you for that. So we'll put the link in the show notes. Okay. Okay, God bless, Elizabeth. And I will see you when we're back from Italy.
That's right. Safe travel.
Okay. Okay, bye. Thanks. Bye.